Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you, Pete. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Hour two underway. We're giving away an opportunity at $1,000 each and every hour. Your next chance, 60 minutes away right here on the Fan. On the Mattress Warehouse hotline, David Aldridge, who has become the editor-in-chief and a fine writer bringing his talents to The Athletic in D.C., full disclosure, I'm lucky enough to call David Aldridge, a colleague slash a boss, is writing a couple of stories for them, but a legend in the business. Of course, spent time at Turner, ESPN, The Washington Post, last 30 years covering sports, joins us on Grant and Danny. David, before we get into the piece you wrote on Jay Gruden's tenure and why you're expecting the Redskins to beat the Panthers yesterday, let's start with The Athletic in D.C. Why did you want to come home and get back to your roots a little bit, doing more full-time writing?
Well, Grant, it was a combination of things. 30 years of flying was getting to be a little much for me. I started covering basketball, the NBA, when I was 23, 1988, and full-time covering the Bullets. There were the Bullets then. And pretty much have been flying ever since. So that was getting harder. I wanted to be home a little bit more. My wife and I have two kids, and they're both young men growing up. Oldest just started high school. That means he's going to be gone in 4 years. And so I wanted to be able to spend more time with them, more time with our younger son as well. And the opportunity that The Athletic provided was just unique. Coming back home to cover all of the sports in D.C., coming back home to be in charge of a city bureau, basically, to have a say in some of the hiring and to be able to work with young reporters and help them get better and learn from them, learn from some older reporters that we've brought in. And then I just thought D.C. had really matured as a sports market. When I first started covering sports, it was all about the Redskins. It wasn't about anything else. I mean, the whole city kind of lived and died by how they were. And if they were having a great season, it was terrific. But if they were having a bad season and they kind of checked out in November, everybody kind of checked out until the draft, basically, but now it's totally different. Obviously the Caps won the Stanley Cup and generated incredible fan buzz throughout the city, in all parts of the city. It was incredibly diverse. It was incredibly enthusiastic. The knowledge of the fan base has really deepened and grown over the years. The Nats, haven't had the success in the playoffs that we would all expect or want, but they've been in the playoffs a whole bunch. They've been a very good team for the last 5-6 years. The Wizards haven't won a championship, but they make the playoffs every year. The Mystics were in the WNBA Finals. So there's just a whole lot more going on in D.C. than just how the football team is going. And so I felt like, hey, this is a great time to jump back in and really see what's going on in this city, because this is home for me.
Yeah, I agree with all that, David. It's been a lot of fun for us as well, being able to ride the wave of support for all the teams. It's actually been really, really cool and refreshing not to have to talk Redskins in April. That's something that's been pretty neat. But here we are, a week of the Redskins game, after that embarrassing loss on primetime television where they just got boat raced. You're confident, though, that they bounce back. Where does your confidence come from?
It's what they do. Right? I mean, you guys have seen it. This is what they do. They have a terrible game. Jay Gruden says code red or code yellow or whatever it is. They come back and they play well the next week. They win the game, and then they start smelling themselves, and they come back and lose the following week. I mean, this is what they do. This is what they've done the last 4.5 years. They haven't had a winning streak longer than two games in 2 years. You know, I mean, it's been win one, lose one, win two, lose two, win two, lose three, win. You know, it just goes back and forth. And so now they're on the trough, if you will, of a terrible game. And so naturally, when everyone expects them to be terrible the rest of the year, they'll bounce back and have a great performance Sunday. So it's just what they've done under Jay Gruden since he's been here.
And weirdly enough, as David Aldridge is our guest, that's an improvement over what they were doing before, because they've been basically 500 for 3 years under him. And they haven't had a stretch where they were 500 or better in a three-year run since they were winning Super Bowls under Joe Gibbs previously, other than one three-year run at the turn of the millennium. Is this a Gruden thing? Is this a lack of talent thing? Why do we think they're not able to deal with any prosperity at all?
Well, I mean, again, as I mentioned, as I said in the column, I think Jay Gruden's a hard-working coach. I think I think the players respect him. You don't get any sense that they feel like he's in over his head, but the bottom line is this is what has happened under his tenure. And he's the only guy that's been here for all of this tenure, you know, him and Trent Williams. And I don't think it's Trent Williams' fault. Right. So, I mean, they just have this pattern where they play well. And then for some inexplicable reason, when you expect them to play well, I mean, I think everybody understood that New Orleans was going to be a hard game because it's in New Orleans. They play well there. It's a fast track. Brees is going for a record. They're going to be jacked. It's Monday Night Football. We got all that. And it's not that I expected them to win the game. I mean, I didn't know what would happen. But you don't expect them to get boat raced like that. I mean, coming off of a Packers win, it's just they were so horrible on Monday. It's inexplicable. It doesn't make any sense when you had 2 weeks off to come back with that kind of performance. And so it just kind of fits into the pattern that they have established under Jay Gruden, which is they just can't seem to handle coming off of a win and following that up with another good performance. It's not a character flaw. It's just what's happened. I can only go by what's happened. And this is what has happened consistently under this coaching staff.
The great David Aldridge with us here on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Dave, let's get into that because it's been exasperating for Redskins fans, right? When the prosperity is right there for the taking, whether this year it's the bad division, you got a chance to show well on national television. A couple years ago, all you had to do was win against the New York Giants team that didn't care at all about that game and did everything they could to lose it, and then you find a way to blow that, which kind of colored their decision, I think, the organizations, about Kirk Cousins a couple years ago. That's what's been so maddening about this tenure. What's the fix? Is there one? Is there a cultural change that's possible? Is there some solution that you could see as someone that's, you know, seen sports for so many years?
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I mean, the bottom line is that you got to assess if this is a coach that can get this done. You know, I mean, what else can you do? I mean, you've changed all the players. You changed the quarterback three times now. You know, I mean, at some point you have to look at the coach and see if he's good enough. For whatever reason, this team just does not seem to consistently play at its highest level, which is what you need to do to win a division and to have a chance in the playoffs. I mean, every team, nobody plays great every week, but most good teams play well most of the time. And you can't say that about this team the last 3-4 years. They play well some of the time. You know, they play well occasionally. I mean, last year, they started off, they played not great at home, got beat by the Eagles, and the Eagles were good. I get that. They came back, had two really good wins, right? They beat the Rams in L.A. They beat the Raiders on Sunday night, beat them bad. They played fine against the Chiefs. It wasn't an embarrassing loss. They played consistently, and you think, okay, well, they're starting to get it together, and then all of a sudden, they lose. They don't play well. They lose at the Eagles. They lose to the Cowboys at home. And then they come back and beat the Seahawks in Seattle. It's just this ping pong thing. So, you know, at some point at the end of the day, Daniel Snyder's got to decide if this is the guy, you know, because how many years do you get to kind of right the ship here? I mean, I understand what Grant's saying. It's better than it was, but better than Jim Zorn shouldn't be the standard. You know what I mean?
Dubious honor.
The standard.
Yeah.
In this town for good football.
And better than it was doesn't mean good either.
Right.
Okay. At The Athletic DC is the Twitter account to follow The Athletic. Of course, David Aldridge, our guest, is the editor-in-chief and going to be writing columns like the great one we're talking about now on Jay Gruden and his tenure and why he thinks the Redskins will beat the Panthers. You're a D.C. guy through and through. I want to go back to your theme, though, of your first piece you wrote for The Athletic, which was the changing sports market, because your perspective is fascinating here. I mean, you've shaped the opinions of a lot of people in strong positions in sports in this town. I believe you actually taught our program director at one point in time at American. I want to know what you see as far as the gap being closed, Redskins versus Nats versus Caps. I mean, you look at the empty seats at FedEx. Even call volume on our show has kind of shifted over the last year or so. Interest of our listeners. The Redskins are still king, right? I mean, they still wear the crown. And how big is the gap now, do you think?
Well, I mean, I think, again, if they're playing well, I think they're still the number one team in town. If they're in the playoffs every year or they're contending every year, they're still the number one team in town. But that hasn't been the case for a long time now. And so you've had this whole generation, whether it's native Washingtonians and their kids or people that have moved to Washington and their kids, you know, you're talking about 20 years now, 25 years now, really, where that hasn't been the case, where you haven't had that Redskins team every year winning 10 games, winning 11 games, you know, either making the playoffs, winning the division, or just missing out, having a real chance in the playoffs. That hasn't been the case here for a very long time. And so I think the Capitals consistently being in the playoffs, consistently, even though it ended almost every year in this excruciating heartbreak, but they were there every year. They got to the second round every year, you know, and so even though it was maddening, they were there in the second round. You know, the Wizards, not a great team by any stretch, but they're in the playoffs. They've won playoff series the last 4 or 5 years. You know, they've gotten to the second round. And the Nationals, I think, have really been a game shifter in this town because of the nature of baseball. It's 6 months where you have to pay attention if you're a real fan. You really have to get invested emotionally in them. And so even though they've had these, again, excruciating playoff losses, at least they've been in the playoffs. And so those teams and those fan bases have an expectation that their teams are going to be in the playoffs and are going to have a chance to advance in the playoffs. And the football team hadn't had that. And so I think the gap, even though I think they're still number one, that gap is much smaller now than it was 20, 25 years ago. There are people that can get along just fine without being Redskins fans in this town and still enjoying the other sports teams in this town and what they're doing. And again, add the Mystics to that. I mean, with Deladon in town now and Christy Tolliver, you know, they're good and they got to the finals this year. So, you know, the fan base there is growing. So you've got a lot of options now that you didn't have 20 years ago.
David, certainly appreciate this. This was awesome. Let's do it again soon.
Guys, thank you for it. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. There's David Aldridge of The Athletic here in D.C. on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Next, I was surprised to hear Jay Gruden tell reporters in Ashburn yesterday that he thinks Josh Doctson's heel problem is going to linger for the rest of the season. I know you're done with Josh Doctson, Danny.
That is correct.
I'm not yet, but I'm teetering, my friend, for the first time. I'm closing in on.
You got a little Hannah Teeter?
I am Harris Teeter. We'll get into that next on The Fan. Grant and Danny welcoming you back. If you missed David Aldridge on the show last segment, you're going to want to podcast that discussion. He was awesome.
He's a star, man. What
Looking
a great guy.
Looking forward to chatting with him a lot in the future as he's back home in D.C. writing for The Athletic. I do some columns for them on the Redskins and other things going on in D.C. sports. Definitely worth checking out. But it's going to be fun to be able to have him on the radio show moving forward. Excited about that. Josh Doctson may not be on the field as much as we'd like moving forward. He missed Monday Night Football against the Saints. For Josh Doctson, you may remember he played in just 2 games in his rookie year. He was fully healthy in that he played in all 16 games in his second season in Washington, taking on opponents every single week. Not quite as productive as you would have liked, but looking up the numbers on just games missed after he missed Monday, he has now not played in 42% of the games the Redskins have had, 36 of them, since he was selected in the first round in 2016.
Uh-huh.
That is almost half of the games the team has played in. Jay Gruden yesterday at the podium asked about Doxson by a bunch of the reporters. I think you're going to hear first a question from Matthew Paris of the Washington Times.
You said yesterday that Josh Doxson's heel probably wouldn't be 100% for the rest of the season. What is it about the injury that's bothering him? And is that something that, I mean, in the offseason that he would have to probably get like cleaned?
I don't know if it's anything. It's just a nagging deal. I think if you think about a swollen heel or a sore heel, every time you put your shoe on and run, it's going to be a nagging type deal. I don't think it's anything that'll keep him out of the lineup, I don't think, for the next few weeks. But it'll just be something that he's got to get a new shoe probably and something to work with and deal with.
Was that aggravated by the kick in practice, or like, was that?
He was, he got kicked in practice. He didn't get a shoe on until Thursday, I think it was. So he wasn't able to practice Thursday or Friday, and then Saturday started feeling a little bit better. Sunday said he felt pretty good, but he didn't do any practice, and I wasn't quite sold. So we kept him out last week.
Jay Gruden yesterday. So he got stepped on in practice. That feels very, are you made of porcelain to me? But it happens. I'm sure it's a legitimate injury. I'm not questioning his toughness.
People laugh at, like, when you hear, like, this guy's got turf toe. And you're like, really? A toe? Dude, turf toe is the most painful thing in the world. You know what I mean? Like, or you really, that's all it is? It's an ingrown toenail? I don't necessarily play that game about toughness or whatever. But I will say, when you add up all the different things with him, I think it's fair to question. You know what I mean? Like, because again, you hear an injury, and if you think it's severe or not, whatever. That's, you know, we're not doctors here. We're just a couple of fat guys. But when you add in, I think the biggest bit of context here, contextual evidence for this, is the MRI when everything is okay before training camp started. That to me was the, oh my God, they're so sick of his act, whatever it is. They're going to stick him in a metal tube and have his, you know, body scanned just to prove to him that he can go practice. Because he was already looking to get out of it.
It was very clear that they needed to show him he was okay. That's what you do when someone's complaining all the time and you want to say, you're healthy, you're fine. Like with a hypochondriac or something like that. Where you take them to patient first or urgent care, whatever it is. And you say, hey, can you just check his vitals and just, you know, do a couple tests and make sure he knows everything's okay? See, you're fine.
I got a buddy, every time he sneezes, thinks it's a sinus infection. Or think he's got like a bronchial invasion or some kind of nonsense. And it's like, nope, you sneeze. Sometimes sneezes happen. You know what I mean? He's that kind of a guy except for football.
I don't want to go too hard in the paint here on Doxson, 42% of games missed. Because he had a chronic debilitating rookie injury that wouldn't go away. That's bad luck that happens. And he's missed now one game since. But the numbers are the numbers. The problem is that in the time between missing Monday Night Football most recently as the second piece of bread and the first piece of bread in this sandwich, the 2016 season, he has not been productive enough to continue necessarily to defend him. Now, I will say, until the end of his time here in Washington, which I think is looming, by the way, I think he plays out his rookie deal and goes elsewhere and has more success elsewhere, that he is not going to be afforded the opportunity to thrive. And he will not be allowed to excel and succeed here in Washington to the extent that he might have otherwise with quarterback Alex Smith. Because Smith, as we talked with Andy Benoit about yesterday, is not a rhythm or timing necessarily thrower. He is not a give guys a chance, throw jump balls thrower. We had a problem with Kirk Cousins in that regard. Smith is worse at it, or at least I'll say does it less. For whatever you thought of Cousins not giving Doxson enough chances, which I think was a very fair critique, he gives Doxson more chances than Alex Smith is going to. He will put more balls up for grabs. It's why he throws more interceptions than Alex Smith. So Doxson and Smith together, as you and I have said since day one, is not going to be a fortuitous relationship for either of them necessarily. But that's just one angle here of several. That is one page in the Doxson book, which is he's hurt all the time. He doesn't catch passes. He doesn't really get open and run free in the secondary for a guy. His measurables. I was at a bar last night in Bethesda hanging out at Black's, and the bartender and I were talking about him, and he pulled up some of his measurables from the combine.
Mm-hmm.
They're stupid. No, he's a 4.5 40 guy. His vertical, everything checks out when you just look at him as an athlete. It's not functional on a football field, it doesn't seem like, though. So here is the question. Danny, you're done with him.
Yes, they should never have drafted him. It was a mistake in the first place. He can't play. He's got a very limited skill set where you have to have the perfect storm or lack thereof. 72 and sunny, and you have to have this jump ball offense. I don't know what NFL team is using that at this point, where you just throw it up a Hail Mary to a guy when everything else is going the complete opposite direction. I think he's useless, and I'm over him. I can't wait for his time here to be over.
So I think he's a really good red zone option and threat. He caught 6 touchdowns as a sophomore last year. And
that's not nothing.
Effectively his rookie season. I think you're way over the top because of your frustration and your anger on, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, how not good he is, end quote. That said, it doesn't matter how much talent he has or how much he doesn't. He's not producing, and I don't think he's going to in this offense with this quarterback. So you're done with him. I'm not. But I am teetering on, basically, I am good on him. Like I saw yesterday, a couple of people came out and said, get rid of him, cut him, whatever. There's no reason to do that.
Right, there's no upset.
There's no reason to get rid of a guy who might be able to help you in season. But the point is, should you start shopping him, perhaps?
I would.
Should you go into the offseason planning to move on from him and try to trade him for something else? Maybe. I mean, I'm definitely at a point where I have no interest in re-signing him and extending him. Zippy, zero, nothing. But that's the question. Where are you at on Doxson? 800-636-1067. Do you still have any hope that he can become a really helpful player in D.C.? We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Josh Doxson is expected to play, ideally this weekend, certainly in the near future. But according to Jay Gruden, he might be playing with pain and dealing with his barking heel for the rest of the season. 800-636-1067 is the number. Are you on team done with Doxson, which is where Danny resides? Or are you like me, where you still have some hope for the guy, but you are teetering at this point? You've got to be one of those two. You can't still just bullishly say, this dude's a stud. They absolutely should have drafted him in the first round. Here was Gruden being asked about him.
You said yesterday that Josh Doxson's heel probably wouldn't be 100% for the rest of the season. What is it about the injury that's bothering him? And is that something that, I mean, in the offseason that he would have to probably get cleaned?
I don't know if it's anything. It's just a nagging deal. I think if you think about a swollen heel or a sore heel, every time you put your shoe on and run, it's going to be a nagging type deal. I don't think it's anything that'll keep him out of the lineup, I don't think, for the next few weeks. But it'll just be something that he's got to get a new shoe probably and something to work with and deal with.
Was that aggravated by the kick in practice, or like, was that?
He was, he got kicked in practice. He didn't get a shoe on until Thursday, I think it was. So he wasn't able to practice Thursday or Friday, and then Saturday started feeling a little bit better. Sunday he said he felt pretty good, but he didn't do any practice, and I wasn't quite sold. So we kept him out last week.
A quarter way through his third season, never had a 100-yard game, never caught 5 balls in a game. Not all his fault. No one's saying it is. But at some point, that matters. And we are at that point, right? Jay is in D.C. Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, I don't believe in him. We got a quarterback that won't throw the ball to anybody that's not 10 yards wide open, and a wide receiver that never gets open. Like, Maurice Harris gets into the game and actually catches passes, and he's slower than Doxson. He's shorter. He's not as strong. Like what's going on? Like, we got a guy that just can't get open. I don't really see the benefit of having him on the field. Nobody cares if he's hurt. You guys update it all the time, but any fan that I talk to, who cares? I care more about Zach Brown's oblique than I care about his heel.
I get you, buddy. I mean, the thing is, it's with first round picks. Remember, like, every day that LeVar Arrington wasn't starting during his rookie year, that was a story. When you're a first round pick, there's an expectation, right? Darius Geis was the story of this preseason, of this training camp, because he was brought in to fix something. When you're a first-round pick, whether it's fair or not, there's a yoke of expectation that's on you. And those expectations, the longer they're not met, it gets exasperating. Because you look around and you go, well, Will Fuller contributes. That's the guy that the Redskins directly passed on. And they traded back a spot with Houston. Now, he's been hurt a bunch too, but when he's in the game, good Lord, that guy's explosive. He catches a deep ball a week, it seems like, from Deshaun Watson. And then you face Michael Thomas, who they passed on altogether in the second round this week, who catches 99% of the balls that are generally in his area, whereas Doxson's sub 50% over the course of his career. It's exasperating. And I understand that, you know, from Jay's perspective, I'd much rather hear about the guys that are impactful and that matter, but there's a thing with a first-round pick, right?
Yeah, there definitely is. And I disagree in general because I think when you talk about Zach Brown's oblique and then you talk about Josh Doxson's heel, there's a very different reaction. Now, it's a visceral, angry reaction.
Yeah, that's right.
But you tweet about both things. One of them is going to get more engagements. You have call topics on both things. There are going to be more people chiming in on Doxson. For the reason that you mentioned with him being a first-round pick, he's also an important player in this offense. The fact that it hadn't amounted to anything yet this year, again, doesn't change the fact that he caught 6 touchdowns last season. When they're in the red zone with Josh Doxson on the field, they got a lot better chance to score. There's a reason why when they were down at the 5-yard line and couldn't get in for their first drive of the game when they got into the red area and they settled for a field goal 6-3, a big part of their playbook was not available there. Herb in Alexandria, how's it going?
Hey, Bob. Hey, how you guys doing?
Hi, Robert.
So here's the deal. In the words of the great Dave Chappelle, I'm effing done with him. I'm done, son. I'm just done. Every single time that he gets on the field, he's not a great producer. He's just not. He shows little flashes, but he shows very little flashes. The best ability is availability. And when is he available? He's always hurt. Like you said, 46% of the time or something like that. He's not like a world beater. I would have rather go with Fuller than him.
Is it a lock, by the way? Thank you, Herb. Great phone
Thanks,
call, buddy.
Buddy.
Is it a lock that he plays on Sunday? I don't think that's a done deal, right?
It wouldn't be, right?
I mean, it's being made out to sound that way, I feel like. I've heard a couple reporters say, well, you know, they held him out as a precaution this week, so you'd think so. But if supposedly he would have been limited in practice on Wednesday yesterday, I would say as of right now, he's very much questionable.
He's definitely in doubt. I mean, so the best thing you can do is try to compare apples to apples. It's not, I've said this from the beginning, even though I can't stand him, he can't play, they shouldn't have drafted him, and I can't wait for him to be gone, it's still not fair to compare him to number ones or even number twos in different offenses, right? It isn't. You can't say, well, he's not Julio Jones, so he's a bust. Well, that's dumb, right? You look at other first-round picks or whatever. This is a different situation. The best thing we can do is compare. The last time this offense had an outside wide receiver productive was 2016. 80 catches for north of 1,000 yards from Pierre Garçon. The idea that we can't even approach that level of production from a guy they drafted in the first round 3 years in tells you the bar's been lowered so far that anything else than that is an excuse made.
Yeah, when he catches a 14-yard in route like he did in week one, which, by the way, was his only catch of the game, we go, see, he can do it.
He's great.
What? You don't catch that ball. We got bigger issues. Dre Manassas, how's it going?
I'm doing well, man. I actually think I'm still in the tank for Josh, and I think Muniz is getting a bad rap. I mean, ultimately, I think the only thing he's guilty of was trying to come back in his first season, injury after injury. Now, as a fan's perspective, we just heard it was, you know, an Achilles, and, you know, we didn't see it. We couldn't hear about it. It wasn't ruptured, so just fans, he should be playing. And I think every time he tried to play and he couldn't go, I think that just exasperated the fan base. But in the end, you basically mentioned it. He's played in, like, you know, 54. He's missed 42% of the games. The last, like, 18 games the Redskins has played, he's only missed one of them. So, I mean, I guess it's one of those when are you looking at these stats? And I think, and everyone used to say it all the time from the fans' perspective, even the sports talk radio, he played for a quarterback last year who was probably trying to protect, you know, his big possibility again, a big-time contract, didn't want to throw too many picks, and obviously we have this quarterback today who doesn't want to throw the ball. So, you know, football is a consummate team sport. You're a wide receiver. You kind of have to hope that the quarterback throws the ball to you. Now, if someone's going to show, you know, the all-22 access film and show me where, you know, he's not getting open here, he's not getting open here, then we can, you know, have a conversation. But I think right now, yes.
At some point, Dre, thanks for the call, buddy, as always. At some point, you got to put up numbers. At some point, you got to produce. It's now multiple quarterbacks. Both had the, quote-unquote, the same problem. And I do believe it's not a strength of either of them. But So his whole career then, I guess we could just say he's actually awesome. It's just that he doesn't get thrown to because dot, dot, dot. Like, I was talking to Craig Hoffman about this, and he goes, why should they throw to him over Chris Thompson or Jordan Reed or Jamison Crowder? And my point is, they shouldn't. Those guys are good weapons, and
those
are great one-on-one matchups. But that also means Josh Doctson is not a first-round talent.
That's the indictment. So, but to Dre's point, Kirk Cousins was in a contract year for three straight seasons. And you know what he did? He threw the ball to Pierre Garçon because that was his best option. His second best option was going to DeSean Jackson. Last time they've had good outside wide receivers. They haven't had that since. A first-round draft pick brought in to be a direct replacement for one or both those guys simply needs to be your best option on most plays. There's a reason when Atlanta runs their offense, it goes through Julio Jones. There's a reason Pittsburgh runs through Antonio Brown. There's a reason that Mike Evans is your first and second option a lot of times. Now, it's not fair to compare him to those guys because those are the elite guys in the sport. They're the five or six best players. My point is the bar has lowered so much for him that we're going to celebrate a four catch for 36 yard game like he's, you know, like he invented fire. It's, to me, it's horrendous.
We need five people on hold right now. I've got a surprise. Is it weird? I want to break out for our double play today.
Whoa.
Yeah. A double play today. A little game called Is It Weird?
We
like to
weird?
Play occasionally on Grant and Danny. But I need five people who are going to vote after we make the case for if something is weird or not right now. So call in if you want to participate. You'll tell us if the act in question is weird or not. 800-636-1067. The Beltway Blitz at noon. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Very simply, I tell you what's going on, or in some cases Danny does, about generally the other person.
Right.
And you have to tell us if it's weird or not. All three of us thought this was weird, and I realized at the time, we've never actually asked people. I don't know if other people do this, so I'm going to take this to the airwaves, and today's the first chance I get. Every single time we have ever traveled anywhere as a show, Danny gets off the plane and is completely gone by the time I get off the plane. We have spent 4 or 5 days together, constantly as friends. There is no goodbye. There is no acknowledgement of a fun time. There is no waving as he walks away. He's three rows in front of me. No exaggeration. And because he moves so quickly and because stupid people are trying to grab their bags for 8 seconds, I don't see him when I get off the plane. And you kind of wait there like, oh, maybe he went into the bathroom. Maybe, do I wait here? Do I not? No. He just rudely left without saying goodbye. So here is the question. Danny loves the Irish goodbye, which I think there are times when that makes sense.
Yeah, that is my standard.
Holiday party. You standard did it at move. A wedding one time. Me and my wife are hanging out with you and your wife. All of a sudden, we have no idea where you are for an hour, and we realize you're gone. That's fine at certain venues. I never do that, but you do, and that's your thing, and that's cool. The post-trip gets to me. I don't know why. And it got to Thami a little bit, and it got to Dar a little bit. It's like, you know what it reminds, it's like Breakfast Club. We're sitting in a suspension on Saturday, and we get to know each other, and we pretend like we're friends for a bunch of days, and then the next Monday at school, you don't know me anymore. You're back in D.C., and I'm not your pal, and you're just gone.
Hmm.
So, if this was a one-time thing, I wouldn't think that much of it.
No, this is an every-time
thing. But I swear to you, if we've taken 10 trips as a show, the number of times Danny has just waited after he gets off the plane, not for 20 minutes, by the way, we sat two rows behind him. This would have taken 60 seconds to say, hey, guys, fun trip. See you later. Or anything. Just been like, all right, guys, heading out. Or even before he gets off the plane, don't wait for us. Just say, see you guys, fun times. Nothing. Headphones on, looking at his phone, playing Words of Warcraft with friends or whatever. Walks off the plane, and he's gone. Is it weird that after a trip where you were with someone for basically every minute of every day for 4 days, they act like you're just another guy on the plane they've never seen before when the plane lands? I think that's a fair, is it weird?
It's a fair question. The categorization, I wouldn't take too much issue with because I think it's pretty spot on assessment. It's time to go home, and that's what I do. So what would happen otherwise is I'd wait around. Other, like, fat people are getting off the plane, taking way too long. Then there's an over conversation. So if I stayed and waited and was like, okay, guys, see you later, then it would be, he doesn't acknowledge enough. We don't have long enough conversations. There, nothing would be ever good
it
enough.
It wouldn't be. It's perfectly reasonable to just
what
say
I'm saying,
bye.
No, what I'm saying is right. So everything, good, the saying goodbye, extended process, when there's four or five people, it's too much. So it's time to go home. It's late at night. I've been away from my family for a long time. I don't want to spend any more seconds in the airport than I have to. It's time to go.
It would literally take, I think 2 minutes is over excessive.
No, it's more than that.
Guy, you were
more than that.
You were three rows in front
of me. Yeah, which means that's a total of, what is that? So it's
not even three rows in front of Dar.
I was. It was more than three rows. I looked back at him and made a joke about the Red Sox score.
Were you behind me or in front of me? I don't remember where you were.
I think I was behind you.
Okay, so you were four rows ahead of Dar and three rows ahead of me and Tom.
So that means a minimum of 12 people taking way too long, and that's minutes. That's minutes of... I was already behind someone walking way too slowly as it was. Just the limp, even though they're not hurt. Just that, like, the, you know, just the standard issue, taking up middle of the hallway. Please hurry, get out of the way. Everyone's trying to go home.
Real quick, Thami, Dar, anything to add before we get our votes? We've got five people, so hopefully we'll have a majority here.
Well, this was, I don't want to say shocking, but the reason why this came up and it's fresh on your mind is
not
because
shocking.
I had never seen this
before.
That's
true.
That's true. It's a shock to
this
you.
This was new for you, and for me, it's just traveling with Danny.
So I go, you know, I wonder if Danny's going to stick around. We say this on the plane, and you go, oh, no, he's gone. As soon as he starts moving, he's going to keep on going.
I told Tom, I said, there is a 0% chance we will see him again. He's like, no, he'll be there. I said, Tom, 0%.
0%.
So I gave Danny benefit of the doubt. Went to the end of the jetway. I stood around. I did the John Travolta gif. I looked around with my hands like, where's Danny?
By the way,
there's a huge straightaway you can see for a half mile down the way. He is gone.
Nowhere to be found. You're saying maybe he's in the bathroom. No, he ran out of that airport almost like I run away from almonds, cashews, pecans, etc.
It's, and I'm being honest when I say it's, I don't want to say I take offense to it. I don't. I personally find it completely rude, but I also see, I see what you're saying as well. I'm used to it now, so I don't, like, take offense.
Right.
The first time I was like, wow, he was, it feels to me like you are just done with being around me. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, and it shouldn't. And it shouldn't feel that way.
Dar?
It should feel like it's time to go home.
Can I just say that I don't find it rude or weird because I'm so used to it?
Yes.
So I just come to accept
it. Because
at first it can be jarring.
The first time you experienced it, did you think, that's weird?
Well, yeah, because Danny and I were traveling by ourselves, and it was a long walk. So I just figured
the two of
Danny
us will
really
maybe
didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah, so you have also flown with Danny multiple times, just you two?
Yeah.
And that makes it even
weirder. So I'm completely used to it now. So I don't find it rude or weird. I just find it par for the course.
Yeah,
if it is rude or weird, we'll find out in five calls.
Yeah, it can be jarring at first when you realize that somebody has seen through the nonsense in life and has made it more efficient and has cut through to correctness. The way that I have.
We had literally been traveling together for 6 hours. But I guess I shouldn't be shocked because me getting on an airplane so I could make work the next day was less important than the sandwich that he had to carry through the airport.
Mufalata Gate. You may have missed that yesterday at the beginning of the show.
There was a day I waited for him.
Grab the podcast.
And he was like, why'd you do that?
Yeah, why'd you have done that?
He was very bothered. Let's get our votes in here. Is it weird? Thaddeus in D.C., is it weird?
It's quirky and a little bit rude, but no, not weird at all.
Wow. Okay.
Not weird.
Rob, in Pasadena, is it weird?
Absolutely weird. It's customary to walk with your travel companion, at least to baggage claim.
1,000%
no
true.
No bags to claim. No, late at night,
I agree,
time to get home.
But that's on your way out the door.
It was definitely on the way out, and I had to wait.
Tom had to wait. Remember what we did? We walked with you. We gave you a bones and said, hey, man, that was a lot of fun.
So it can be, if you decide it's rude, that's your prerogative. But I think weird is incorrect.
Let's go to Kamal in Centerville. Weird or not?
No, I mean, it's not weird. You guys work together every day, and, you know, you got to get home when you got to get home, man. It's not weird. You got to get out of here.
It's a 5-minute difference.
Tom in Manassas, if that. Tom, how are you?
Good. What's up, guys? Grant, Tommy, Dar. We're all adults. We know how to disembark. We know how to pick up our luggage, and we know how to get into a car and get home, unless you're Grant and you forget your cell phone.
That's a good point.
So it is not weird.
Thank you.
Wow.
I'm glad I'm not your friend.
Stunned by this. You know what? We're
learning
a lot
about... Please
don't
ever talk to me at a station event.
We're learning a lot about friendship right now. Michael in Fredericksburg, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I got one qualifying question. How does he say goodbye at the end of every work shift? If he says goodbye, if he makes at least a nonverbal gesture.
I do, actually.
Does he say bye to you guys when he leaves?
Yeah, every day. Don't lie.
There's like a puff of smoke, and then you can hear something going down the hallway, but I can never make it out.
That's absurd. Now you're just lying. Anyway, say goodbye every day.
If he doesn't say goodbye at the end of every day and this is just his normal goodbye, then it's not weird.
Okay.
If he's behaving differently at that point, then it's weird.
Gotcha.
Oh, I see. So the qualifier actually worked against me. So here's the point. It was 3-2 in favor of not weird. The thing that's so interesting is to me is you guys are so insecure and so fragile that you think that somehow now affects. We've been traveling together for hours and spent so much time together, and like our relationship is teetering on the edge of a knife. And if I don't say bye in the way that you guys like, and now nothing counts anymore.
Nothing's teetering.
We have plenty of deposits in the friendship bank. All right, we got plenty of deposits in there. So if I make a withdrawal after traveling for a dozen hours and carrying a bunch of crap around, and it's time to go home to see my wife and kids, we should probably reassess.
I'm not questioning the friendship.
Yes,
but it is odd behavior.
Exactly. No one's saying we're not friends. What I'm saying is, I also thought it was weird at Thom's wedding. When, like, we're just hanging out, shucking
Dar's
and
wedding.
Jiving
this is
all
the second
night.
Time you said this.
My bad. Dar's wedding. Thom's wedding's coming up. We're shucking and jiving and doing bits all night, and we're dancing, and it's just, you know, two's a crowd here. You know, you're a couple, are a couple, we're all a couple. Danny's in the bathroom, I guess. Oh, wait, his wife's gone, too. Where's it? And you're just gone. That's weird to me.
That's on you. That's the Irish goodbye.
Would you
goodbye.
Admit that it's rude?
No, the Irish goodbye is industry standard.
Oh my god,
it's just so correct. All right, man, we'll see you. Okay, guys, what are you up to later?
I'm
All
sure
right, y'all.
Something
okay,
is,
everyone.
I'm sure something's industry standard when I learn it from Danny Hoo-ha.
The Irish goodbye is the most normal and correct way to go about your business. I've said goodbye for hours to people. It sucks. But just go. I'm not the star.
Here's
no
all
cares.
You would have had to do. 2 minutes, literally. End of the. It wouldn't have been
100%.
Three rows, guy. We were three rows behind you. Exactly.
That's minutes. Just waiting.
Two of them, and you say, "See you guys, fun trip," and then you run like you love to.
But then he ran out of the airport. He runs so fast. I've never run an airport except the one time they were going to close the door on me when I was connecting in London to go to Paris. It's the one time I've ever run in the airport. I'm not home alone.
Hey, how about
I walk correctly?
How about if you're going to do that, why don't you just turn around and be like, "See you guys." So that we know you're gone. We're not waiting for you at the bathroom or something like that.
I'm not shouting across the plane full of people.
It's three rows. It was 5 feet.
So many people.
I leaned forward
and tapped
you at one point
from my seat. No one cares about my convo. No one cares about it. Just time to go home. It's time to go home.
You say no one cares about the convo, but you chatted up a stranger about a sandwich on the flight before that.
Yeah, I'm not involving other people in my business. I'm not going to start.
Like a sandwich. That's
okay,
your business.
Guys, I'll see you guys. I'll see you tomorrow in 6 hours. No one needs to hear that crap. Mind your business and go home. Mind your business and leave. Get off the damn plane. Just get off the plane.
Hey, see you, man.
Mind your business unless it's about a sandwich. Then it's everyone's
it's a
business.
Beltway Blitz is next on Grant and Danny. Teams you care about, jam packed into a segment.
Here's good business going to Ted Britt Ford. They will help you. Get yourself a brand spanking new ride that you'll love. I love Ted Britt Ford. They're the best. I got two cars to prove it from my experiences at Ted Britt Ford, right? They don't care about your behavior in an airport. They don't care if you walk calmly and correctly through baggage claim. They don't care what kind of person you are, whether you're Irish goodbye or stay for hours saying goodbye over and over again to the same people that you work and see with all the damn time. What you'll get is great treatment from a bunch of people that are good at what they do. They've been in business almost 60 years. These guys are awesome. Here's some deals that are going on right now. How about $178 a month for 36 months for an Echo Sport? $199 a month, 36 months. Lease on an Escape Explorer, as little as $319 a month. Here are a couple ones that are near and dear to my heart. How about this? Ford Fusion, $199 a month for 36 months. I got a Fusion. I love it. We also got an Edge in the Hooray family, $259 a month for 36 months. So many great deals, so little time. Get 120% Kelley Blue Book value when you trade in your old bus to join at Tempur Ford. Drive off. Go see him in Fairfax, Philly. Tell me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.